SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at Belmont Park, and in the public service manner in which we in which we're involved, I can tell Ron Anderson, yes, Ron, I got your umbrella. Ron leaving his umbrella here and asking me if I could go get it, and I did. Jay Pribman is standing by, and he'll be here soon enough. And, in fact, they're already asking me at King Umberto's, when a Pribman come?
Not soon enough. Hi, Steve. I get in on Sunday night. And, yes, looking forward to many visits. It'll be good to be the king.
It is good to be the king, and looking forward to getting Jay here as well. And Jay, before we talk about everything Belmont and all the lead up, and you've been tracking the morphing field, including the potential international participants, tell us about dark horses. And there's some real excitement ahead, and sounds like it's going to be really fun to watch.
So, yeah, this is a documentary that was done by a documentarian named Castor Fernandez, and in conjunction with NBC, reviewing the rivalry between Sunday Silence and Easy Goer, but through the prism of the Hancock family and how Seth ended up on one side of that equation and Arthur, obviously, on the other. And I was one of the, you know, having covered that whole Triple Crown, I was one of the people that they reached out to interview, and I know that Amy Zimmerman and Jay Hovde, Ray Pollock were among the others who were interviewed for this. So and it's airing tomorrow on NBC, on the network, not NBC Sports Network. There'll be repeats on NBCSN, but NBC itself is showing it tomorrow at 5 o'clock Eastern Time, 2 o'clock Pacific. So I'm looking forward to seeing the final product.
Absolutely. And I'd seen a couple of little notices here and there, but this week the flares went up to make sure that everybody was aware. And I'll also make everybody aware that Cracksman at 1-9 barely just won the Coronation Cup, and we didn't play it because it didn't seem like there was any threat, and he was absolutely all out to beat Saluin in the final strides, and so almost a mammoth upset of the outstanding Frankel four-year-old in the Coronation Cup, and 11:30 Eastern, the Epsom Oaks. Jay, turning attention to the action here, and there is a segue between the Coronation Cup and Belmont. Hawk Bill, the brother of Free Drop Billy, the field continues to morph, and it does look like if there's going to be a Triple Crown winner, he's going to have faced the most horses a Triple Crown winner ever faced in the Belmont.
Well, we're looking at a potential field. I think it's going to end up being around 11. I don't think, based on the reporting Dave Brenning's been doing, with being in regular touch with Dermot Weld, we're not expecting that horse to come when it's all said and done. But maybe he will. But at the moment, it didn't look like it. So 11 or 12 runners, depending on what happens with Dermot Weld's horse. And that's great. I mean, it should be a big field. It's a great race in and of itself. And obviously, a potential Triple Crown on the line makes it all the more interesting.
Your early thoughts here, Jay. We talked in the shadow of the Preakness. We've since had Justify return to the racetrack. We had him turn in a very sharp work on Tuesday. Talk a little bit about how any things, any thoughts and feelings have moved here in the 10 days since we spoke last.
No, I mean, like I said on your show, in the aftermath of the prelims, I thought there was some real overreaction to the performance of Justify, and you know, there were a lot of knee-jerk, like, oh, there's no way he can win the Belmont now. It's like, it's all a process here. He had had a light training schedule in between the Derby and Preakness, and now he's got a chance to, for 3 weeks in between the Preakness and Belmont. I haven't obviously seen the horse in person, having returned to California following the Preakness. I saw him the next day in Baltimore, the day after the Preakness, but I haven't seen him since. But having watched the videos that have been posted, especially of the gallop the day before he breezed on Monday, I thought he looked particularly sharp. And then the work itself was obviously very good. And the fact that Baffert has this horse on pretty much the same schedule that American Pharoah was on 3 years ago, to me, is very encouraging. American Pharoah also had two works in between the Preakness and Belmont, and his final work was the Monday of Belmont week, and it was at Churchill Downs, and it was particularly sharp, and that's the timetable that it looks like Justify is going to be on for his final breeze before he heads to New York on Wednesday.
We are always intrigued by the unique factors that weigh on any Belmont, let alone a Triple Crown try. And one thing, Jay, that I think is part of the evaluation process and some of the way in which people are looking toward this race, it is very different from pre-American Pharoah. And I brought this up with Tim Layden the other day. How do you feel views of this try are colored by the fact that we've had a Triple Crown winner, when so many of these pre-Belmont anticipatory moments were, you know, the search for a Triple Crown winner?
Right. I mean, obviously it's a different flavor because it happened, and it happened recently, probably analogous to when Seattle Slough was going for the Triple Crown in 77, only in that case 4 years after Secretariat hit ended what was then a 25-year drought between Citation and Secretariat. This was a longer drought, 37 years to American Pharoah, but now it's an even shorter time in between American Pharoah and Justify's bid to do it. So I think there is for sure a different flavor. I think it'd be the other way of looking at it is, what would this be like if American Pharoah had failed, and what kind of anticipation would there be of, you know, now 40 years of futility of a horse trying to win the Triple Crown. I think we'd be looking at it through a completely different prism. That said, I think there's some historically significant aspects to this, and it runs through Baffert, because he's got a chance to become only the second trainer to win the Triple Crown twice. Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons did it with Gallant Fox in Omaha back in the 30s. So there's that aspect to it. But in terms of, I think, the anticipation of a Triple Crown, I do think it just feels different because it happened recently and the drought ended. And so it just feels, there's just a different look to this than if it had been a situation if American Pharoah had failed in his bid, and now Justify was trying to be the one to end that long streak.
Do you sense that there's less of a general public interest level? I mean, certainly, using TV ratings, which are, I don't know how important in this era they are, but the Preakness numbers jumped, and don't know if that was a function of an undefeated horse and Baffert's notoriety or what. But do you sense that there's as much interest now, or is the bloom off that rose?
No, I think there's still a lot of interest. I mean, it's hard for me to quantify it. I mean, the TV ratings obviously would suggest there's still keen interest in it. And I think that's a good barometer for something like that. But it's hard. It's just hard to know. I mean, you're so immersed in it, in the sport. It's not like I've gone around and asked at my local diner, are you as fired up for this as you were for American Pharoah? I mean, obviously the ticket interest at Belmont Park, all the reserve seats are gone. There are just a few general admissions that are left, and to me that indicates that there's a healthy atmosphere out there of people who want to potentially see a historically significant achievement. You know, the other thing about this feat is that if Justify wins, he obviously would be the first horse to win the Triple Crown without running a two-year-old. He's done all this since making his debut in mid-February. And that's also a historically significant achievement compared to the 12 who, if he does pull it off, compared to the 12 who would have preceded him.
Now, this whole storyline, you don't really know where these stories go. And as we were moving toward the Santa Anita Derby, and then coming out of that with Justify, and now, you know, after Baltimore, I'm kind of amazed that there isn't even a greater degree of marveling at what this horse has done.
Well, I mean, that might be because, like you say, we were discussing a few minutes ago the situation because of American Pharoah and has that impacted people's appreciation of what's going on here. And maybe that's part of that reason. It's like, oh, well, we know a horse can win the Triple Crown. But, you know, it's only happened 12 times. It's only happened once in the last 40 years. You can look at it that way. And to me, the fact that this horse is in a position to win the Triple Crown, and most people hadn't even heard of them before the afternoon of February 18, I think it's amazing how far this horse has come in such a short amount of time. And I think that really, as we've talked about before on your show, I think that really speaks to just how talented this horse is to be able to do something like that. I think if he pulls it off, there'll be a real appreciation for what he's been able to do in such a short amount of time, because it would be unprecedented.
Without the benefit of the draw per se, and, you know, with a bulky field, there'll be a lot of, there'll be a degree of, even at a place like Belmont, where, you know, there's a huge run up to the turn, and you know, the post positions have never been as big a concern here as they are in Pimlico and Churchill. But who do you fear if you're Baffert?
To me, the only thing to fear would be if just the cumulative effect of everything that Justify has been asked to do catches up with him at the quarter pole. I mean, he's clearly the best horse. But is he still going to be the best horse after now in his sixth race in this short amount of time and the demands of the Triple Crown and now trying to go a mile and a half at Belmont Park, and it just all finally catches up to him? And somebody can nail him in the stretch. That to me would be the quote unquote fear. I mean, from a horse standpoint, from a talent standpoint, you know, he's proven he's the best horse. He proved in the Derby, and he proved in the Preakness. So, who would be able to take advantage of that situation? I mean, it could be any number of horses. Obviously, you know, like Vino Rosso certainly is capable of bouncing back after his Derby performance, and we've seen the run in the Preakness, run in the Derby, skip the Preakness, run in the Belmont approach work more often than not over the last 15 years, and in particular when practiced by Pletcher. I mean, that's just been his wheelhouse in terms of the Belmont Stakes, and he's going to have two horses that are going to fall into that category, and Vino Rosso and Nobilindi. And then, of course, you've got Provazo, who Lucas had said even before the Kentucky Derby was the kind of a hardy horse who was going to be able to stand up to the rigors of the Triple Crown, and he's shown that. He ran a good race in the Derby. He ran a better race in the Preakness. He had a nice mile work the other day. And now he's going to be coming back and running in the Belmont. So then maybe he's better equipped to handle the rigors of the Triple Crown than Justify is. I mean, my gut is that he's not, that, you know, the Justify is a better horse, but still, you just, you're into those uncharted waters in terms of distance and race frequency, where you don't really know. But to me, it justifies race to win or lose, and he's either going to win the race because he's the better horse, or he's going to lose the race because, as I said a moment ago, the cumulative effect of everything that he's asked to do just catches up to him, and you're not going to know that until the top of the stretch, unfortunately, from a gambling standpoint. But he's shown he's the best horse.
Well, it's going to be an exciting week. We're ideally clearing the rotten weather out so that we can have a dry classic for the first time this cycle. And Jake, looking forward to getting you here and keeping tabs on what you and Dave Grenig and the team at DRF bring us leading into Belmont.
Yeah, no, you'll have a report today from Dave and Mike Welsh as well on the works that have gone on this morning at Belmont. And I know Marty McGee was out to keep tabs on Justify's gate schooling and gallop this morning at Churchill Downs. So we've got everything covered and looking forward to being there. And by the way, just so everybody knows, since I won't be on your show again until next week, if you're wagering, the over-under will be posted at 4.5. So 4.5 over-under is going to be the over-under for King Umberto's. Wager-wise.
I think we have the smart money has always been the over.
Yeah, well, there's some things that are going to get in the way of that number being higher. You know, usually I lay it at 5.5, but I already know there's some, like, you know, the draw Tuesday at City Field that's going to prevent, you know, a dinner at King Umberto's, for instance. So, you know, there's just little things that are kind of impacting the line. So trust me, it's going to land on 4 or 5.
We will keep everybody advised, and there may be that key juncture midweek when Jay goes for the doubleheader, the day-night doubleheader, which I've been known to do. I love it. DRF Pridman, everybody.
Let's play two.
Let's eat two. I've already had a grandma slice and a regular slice. Jay, safe travels. We'll see you Monday.
Very good. Thanks, Steve.
I love it. Dave Grenig will join us later as well. And Jim Dunleavy, DRF colleagues, next when we come back. 90 minutes in, 90 to come. We're at Belmont Park. It's very quiet, particularly now because there's no racing till 3 o'clock. And everybody can go home, and certainly the horsemen can go home and relax for a little bit before coming back for post time. So twilight today, and given the lousy morning we had weather-wise, that's just as well, too. And we'll see about what they're going to do about turf. I mean, it rained plenty. And yesterday, it was misty pretty much. There was a little spat of rain. So the turf course may be able to have taken that punch. And they'll be interested to see what they decide for later. We're going to come back, though, and talk about Penn. Penn National very well may have their best card that anybody can remember tomorrow. And we certainly hope that they're not going to be victimized, because the turf races that comprise that stake sequence, the Pick Four, the Ladies Dash and the Oaks and the Governor's Cup and the $500,000 Penn Mile, absolutely terrific. And before that, they've got the Pennsylvania Bred Stakes leading up to that. You got three nice fields for the New Start, the Liffard, and the Danzig. So, and then there's a good allowance that goes as the second race, going 6 furlongs. The Liffard is on the grass too. So there's a lot hanging in the balance. We'll see what James Dunleavy's got to say about the slate. He's covering it for DRF. Then Ed DeRosa, Rick Hammerly, and Dave Grenig. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire. Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF past performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races. Just looking forward to a visit from Jim Dunleavy, and I want to mention, I didn't get to it yesterday, I want to extend sympathies to the Hennigs as they lost Guy Justar, a wonderful, wonderful, hard-hitting sprinter that I don't know how many times I saw Guy Justar run, and terrific at 3, won the King's Bishop, and then he really faced the best of his generation. Mark wasn't afraid to stretch him out either. He raced in things like the Whitney and so forth, but he was best going 6 and 7. And even the one turn miles that he tried, he never won a cigar or the Met, but he was competitive. He was Pico Central's. It was in Pico Central's Met win, for example, and was third in when Purge won the Cigar Mile. The late Ned Evans, of course, and Mark's very successful relationship training for Evans, and Guy Justar was a big part of that. 11 time winner. In 34 starts, another 11 placements in his career, $1.1 million the hard way. And 19 years old, Guy Justar on Wednesday. So wanted to slip that in. And I've not seen Mark, actually, these first couple of days. since coming here, but I certainly will, and we'll maybe get a chance to slap him on the air as well. And you know, yesterday he ran cash. She hasn't recaptured that flash of brilliance from the winter yet. So keeping an eye, and Hennig potentially has got a big weekend ahead. So as soon as we see him next week, we'll get some thoughts. Let me turn our attention to Penn National. And as I've said the last couple of days, since we knew the way those fields were going to come together, James Dunleavy, is this potentially the best card ever assembled at Penn National?
Well, the card came up very, very good. That's for sure. I have trouble comparing it to past years. The equaling factor could be the weather, however. So we have to keep an eye on that. You know, it's the old, if you live by the turf, you die by the turf. And there's a lot of subtropical depression, Alberto rain drifting north. So it's cloudy there now, but they had some showers yesterday. There's possibility. You know, the forecast from now through tomorrow afternoon is, you know, possible showers, possible thunderstorms. It's about 60%. So fingers crossed that everything stays on the grass. Five of the seven stakes tomorrow are on the turf. So,
wow.
It's a shame. I don't want it to turn into Pimlico 2, you know? So
yeah.
Preakness Day 2 or Derby Day 3, you know? So that is a question mark coming into it.
How much moisture has the turf course taken to date, and what impression do we get from the Penn National staff that with people traveling with horsemen traveling, they're including Jimmy Toner with Hawkish, Todd Pletcher and more, any feel for that, for, you know, what kind of condition the course is already in?
Yeah. Okay, so as of Wednesday, which was the day they drew, that's the last time I've really spoken to Eric Johnson, the director of racing. I think the course is firm and pristine. As they've done in past years, they've kind of saved the course for this big day. So they've only run four races on it this year. So the course is in great shape, and that is a deepish grass course too. So it should be, you know, that from that perspective, it's in really good shape. But they did get some rain yesterday, and it's not for a lot of rain today or tomorrow, the AccuWeather forecast, but we're just going to have to see. You know, if one of those big soakers goes over them, you know how it's been lately around here. So it's hard to say.
Well, let's look at the fields and talk a little bit about the mile. We know that the Toner's coming with Hawkish. He'll scratch from the Pennine Ridge, and the rest of the cast, very solid.
Right. I just wanted to add, though, that Eric Johnson, the director of racing at Penn, he did say that they're not going, if the course is safe, they're going to run on it, whether it's soft or regardless of, you know, how much condition it is. So the only way they're not going to try to save the course or worry about tearing the course up for future race cards down the road, because this is, you know, this is the big day of the year. So as long as conditions are safe, the races, he's going to keep them on, and, you know, he's got his fingers crossed like I do that, you know, they're kind of like on the fringe of the rain. So let's hope it misses them for the most part.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Let's look at the Penn Mile. It's an 8-horse field. Smart Remark, Victoria Oliver's horse, is kind of a long shot, one of the longer shots in the race. He was entered at Churchill last night, but scratched in favor of the Penn Mile because his turf race, he was in a non-winners of three allowance race there, or optional claiming race, I guess, on the grass, and it was moved to a sloppy main track. So he's coming. So all eight of them are expected to come in. Murad has won the American Turf over a yielding course. Didn't run well at Keeneland on yielding grass for Todd, but did run well at Churchill, you know, to win the Grade II American Turf over yielding. So he's fine. But there are some question marks in there, like Encumbered, who Simon Callahan is sending out from California to make his 3-year-old debut, all firm, Therapist, all firm. Hawkish, to me, just just has a look of one, just a natural grass horse. And I think more often than not, good grass horses will handle the going regardless. And I'm kind of guessing that he will be able to get over it. Okay, he comes off a wonderful first level optional claiming win at Aqueduct in mid April, which visually was just very impressive. But he is going to face much tougher here. But he just may be up to it. And I think with Smart Remark in the race and in post seven, and he's bankable in post eight, there are your two speeds. And I was hoping Smart Remark would come, because I think now a reasonable pace is assured with those two drawn next to each other on the outside. And I think the pace should be at least realistic. Because if he would have run last night, I thought it would have left Heath Bankable at the lone speed, and that's no longer the case. And that would have made it tougher on the closers in the race, Marad, Therapist, and Cumberd. Hawkish figures to take up a nice trip, though, like right off the speed. That's what he did in his optional claiming win, where he was tactical enough to, you know, get a good position, and then he was very, and he was able to sit there patiently until it was his time to run, and then turning for home. So all the looks of a very promising horse. Is he ready for this jumping class right now? That's the question.
One horse I don't want to let the conversation move on elsewhere without talking about way early. And George Weaver, who looks absolutely Weaver-esque in here. Jim and Susan Hill, a unassuming New York bred by Tisway, out of a Bricosity mare, and going to get first Lasix in here. And, you know, was beaten by Therapist in the Awad last October. This is only his second start as a three-year-old. And 10-1 may go even higher. And way early figures to sit a really good trip in here. Kendrick Carmouche, I'm not leaving way early off any ticket.
Well, you will get rewarded if you are correct for your insight there, because he is a big price in here, and he's an easy one to overlook. I thought the AWOD was a pretty good race last October, too. And, you know, Therapist won it. It was a 10-horse field. It's a one-turn mile, and I thought they came home pretty well in there. There you have it. I always respect George Weaver's horses, and maybe he can step up here. It is a pretty wide open group. I mean, everyone, there's nobody that just lays over the field. Even though Marad is the most accomplished and the likely favorite, it's a pretty evenly matched bunch.
Well, and Simon Callahan showing up here. Rick Hammerly will join us next hour, and I thought Encumbered's presence was at least interesting. This is a kind of a offbeat way to start a horse's campaign, showing up here. And given the opportunities at home, Simon Callahan may have been laying in wait with Encumbered. So it's a very interesting set of horses in the Penn Mile. We'll back up one race, and the Governor's Cup, one of two.
I don't want to interrupt you, but just one. I did have a chance to talk to Simon this week, and I wrote about him more than a lot of the other horses here, you know, because his form is kind of hidden, and Simon shared some good information about the horse, while Marad's form is pretty obvious, what you can expect, and Therapist is pretty obvious. His is kind of hidden, you know? And so let me just run through the Encumbered situation just quickly. Showed a lot of promise last year or two at Del Mar. I mean, he beat My Boy Jack in a turf maiden race, and then they came back, both of them, to Del Mar Juvenile Turf, and he beat him again. Now, My Boy Jack came back to win for Keith DeSormo. He came back to win the Zuma Beach in his next start on grass. And then this year, we know, you know, he went and shipped to Oaklawn and won the Southwest, and he shipped to Keeneland and won the Lexington. So, good horse he beat there. Those two races, though, encouraged Simon and his owners to go back to dirt for the front runner, which is the main track 2-year-old prep for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. at Santa Anita. Just, you know, he was coming around. He had come off those two wins in a row. They tried him. It didn't work out. Simon says, well, we took a shot. That after that race, we knew we had a turf horse. So he ran him in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. And I'll tell you, if you watch the replay, he worked out a sweet trip under Mario Gutierrez, stalked the pace to the top of the lane, and looked like he had a lot of horse. And he went from a lot of horse to no horse very quickly. And he backed up. And Simon said he came out of that race a little bit sore, and they had to go in and do a minor knee surgery. But he's come back great, and he's trained great, and they think very highly of him, and they think he belongs in this type of race, and that's why they shipped him. And Simon also has the filly Treasuring, who comes off the Grade Three, winning the Grade Three Señorita in the Penn Oaks. So they sent them both out. And next week he's coming back with American Gal for the Bed of Roses and Moonshine Memories for the Acorn. So that's where we stand. I didn't mean to interrupt you. So
no, not at all. No, I appreciate it because Callahan has shown, you know, his ability to ship and win. You know, obviously, going back to Derby week, well worth evaluating. Let's talk about the Governor's Cup, one of two turf sprints. Ladies Dash starts the All Stakes Pick Four, but talk about the Governor's Cup group.
Right. So we got 12 entered in here, which is great. That's a lot of horses on Penn's turf course in a five-horse race, in my book. One is going to scratch, though. You got to have Hart, who's on the rail, is main track only. Well, maybe not going to scratch. Hopefully that horse is going to scratch because we're going to stay on the grass.
Yes.
But, you know, otherwise, they've entered main track only, and I guess it's possible that it could happen, but let's not even talk about that. Pure Sensation, terrific turf sprinter. We all know him. Christophe Clément has managed him excellently over the last few years. His Achilles heel, not to make a metaphor, but his Achilles heel has always been his feet. So Christophe Clément knows this horse very, very well, and he's always had to be very careful with his fragile feet. And when he is right and good and his feet are good, he is very, very tough. He's now seven, however. So, you know, he's getting up in that age range, seven-year-old gelding. And but he's by far the most proven horse in the race, and he's got that speed. I mean, he's won on the lead. He's won from just off it. But Irad Ortiz rides. He's got to get positioned before that turn. You don't want to be, you know, you might get three wide into it. I don't care, but you don't want to be six wide into it, you know. So that's kind of the crux of it. He is going to be the favorite. He's the horse. He is clearly and should be the horse to beat. But is he unbeatable? That's the question in there. What are your thoughts, Steve?
I like Dubini. I like Kate DeMasi. I think she does an amazing job. And it feels like Dubini is sneaky in here, gets Carmouche. And you go back to last year, he kept company with, you know, the best, including Rainbow Air, going back to that turf championship, is a horse, when you look at these turf sprints, always distinguish between five, five and a half, and six, because there's a real difference. I mean, there's horses, much like seven furlong dirt sprinters versus six furlong dirt sprinters, there's that nuance with turf sprinters as well, and it feels to me like Dubini is kind of clever in here to me, and that's where I'm going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. His race in the Aqueduct Turf Sprint Championship was really good, and Rainbow Air is a good measuring stick because we know when he's on his game how good he really is, you know, and which is very, very good. So that closing second there, where he just missed by three quarters of a length last November, was a very good effort. This will be his first start of the year, so he's got to do this off the bench. Kate DeMasi's bread and butter is turf sprinters. Let's face it, you know, she's developed some very nice turf sprinters over the last few years, mainly fillies, but, you know, he's kind of flying under the radar here, and he's a must-use, I think, too. I agree with you there.
Nice
I'll throw
group.
One just, like, yep. Long shot, throw one a bomb here, and I've got to say, I've never really been a gigantic grasshopping fan. He's run around these parts for a long time. Claudio Gonzalez, who took over his training from Mario Saray three starts ago. So now he's based at Laurel with Claudio, who's a terrific trainer in my book. Grasshoppin is going great guns right now. He is at the top of his game, and he's tough, and he's got class. And the question is, he's a dirt horse.
You know?
I mean, he's made 42 starts, and only one of those are on turf. So can he handle the turf, and can he handle maybe a mushy turf course? So it's hard to say, but, you know, he's 12-1 on the line, and I think he's got to be every penny of that. So you can never go wrong if you have a hunch and you got a price like that and a horse is really thriving as he is. That's the time to use him. So he comes in off two wins, including a win over Driven to Compete, who races today at Belmont. So maybe it's worth watching Driven to Compete, who's trained by Todd Fletcher. He is in a second-level optional claimer at Belmont today, and Grasshopping drilled him last time. So if Driven to Compete comes back and runs well today, like I'm thinking he might, then I think that flatters Grasshopping a little bit more. And he's a bomber. You know, he's a big price in here. And this is once you get by Pure Sensation, this race just opens up. You can't go wrong anywhere. I mean, you've got to look at 8-year-old Oak Bluffs, trained by Mary Epler, coming back in 2 weeks' race. Just ran in the Jim McKay turf sprint over that super saturated Pimlico course and was third, which is not bad. And he is going to be in the hunt here. He was narrowly beaten in this race a year ago, as a matter of fact. He got beaten. He was beaten three quarters of the length by Bold Thunder in that Richards Boy race. Do you remember that? Where Bold
Sure.
Thunder won. He was DQ'd for...
Yep.
Coming out, ducking out from the whip and smacking Richards Boy. And then he was re-awarded the win when Richards Boy came up with a positive, came up with a methamphetamine contamination positive, was DQ'd from the purse. So he was, Oak Bluffs was third, fourth, just three quarters of a length behind those two a year ago in this race.
I'll also mention, since we're surveying some of the crazy prices, last week we talked about analyze the odds, getting an opportunity, first off the claim for Jason Service. Well, Raise Warrior for Michael Dubb, 10-1, Joel Rosario. There's speed in this race. There isn't necessarily open-mouth runoff speed, so Raise Warrior could get to the lead in here, depending on what happens next to him with Midtown Charlie Brown. And I'd be remiss, you brought up Mary Epler, and we already talked about Kate DeMasi. How about the third female trainer in here, our friend Linda Albert? And Linda trained a horse of ours, Rampillion, to a maiden win at Delaware several years ago. Always root for her. And Triple Burner is far from impossible in here, making a second start of the year. The Roaring Fever gelding, 10-1. This is a really, really fun race.
It's funny. I just wrote a story this morning on another Roaring Fever gelding named Breaking the Fever.
Who's the three-time Deborah Breed.
He runs Monday up at Finger yep. Lakes, shooting for his third straight George Barker. And he's the king of Finger Lakes, three-time horse of the meet up there, but he got beat in his seasonal debut in an allowance race on May 12th. And so I talked to Ronnie Breed this morning about what happened and where do you stand. And so anyway, that'll be up on DRF.com later this afternoon.
Very nice. Let's quickly hit the Oaks and the Ladies Dash.
Yeah. Let's go to the Oaks. How's that?
Yep.
Okay. Here's a race where I don't think soft will matter very much, or at least not to two of the main players in my mind. The Way I Am, terrific winner at Gulfstream, rattled off those three stakes wins. The Ginger Brew, the Sweetest Chant, the Here Comes the Bride, Bing Bang, Bingo Bango Bongo. Then went up to Keeneland for the Appalachian and was second to Rushing Fall. And I mean a really good second to Rushing Fall. They were both moving very, very smartly at the finish. And Rushing Fall arguably had the better trip of the two. where at the top of the stretch, the way I am, trained by Graham Motion, have to sit and wait and look for the hole where, you know, to go through while rushing fall had a full head of steam. So once the way I am found a crease, she finished very well to be second best in the Appalachian, and she's undoubtedly the horse to beat here. And the Appalachian was, you know, she's a French bred, and the Appalachian was run over yielding, and she certainly handled that well. So she's okay on off going. And Simon Callahan's filly Treasuring, who comes in off the Senorita, in her United States starts, has raced on only firm out west. But in Ireland and Great Britain last year, before she was sent over here, sent to Mr. Callahan, ran very well on yielding and soft and yielding in Ireland. And I think their yielding and soft is a little different than our yielding and soft. So she should be okay for the course and is a player in here in my book also.
Well, also going to point out George Abreu. Good things take time on the outside, coming out of that race with the way I am and behind Rushing Fall, and also got absolutely victimized with and Dina Del Sur, Tom Albertrani. That was in the Florida Oaks at Tampa, looked like a winner only to get nailed in the final stride. So obvious 3-1 shot, don't need me to point her out per se, but got a look. And I would say, you know, I would say Clement Raucous, second start of the year and stretching back out to a mile, she's worth a look if you want a little price inclusion.
I agree 100%. I was at Aqueduct last November for her Chelsea Flower win, and she flew home that day. She really, and she was a giant price in there too. She was 41-1, and she won in an 11 horse field and just really took off down the lane. It was kind of shocking. So, very good win in the Chelsea Flower. Encouraged Christophe to send her out to Del Mar for the Jimmy Durante, where she ran a good third. No problem there. Lays her off to the winner. They bring her back in the misdirection at Aqueduct, but that's 6 furlongs, which is really not her distance. This mile looks to be her distance to me, much better than the 6. And she didn't run terrible, but she didn't run good. She got beat 3 lengths, and she's 8. So it was, I can easily forgive her for that race and look for better here. And she's under the radar a bit too.
That gets us to the start of the pick four, the Ladies Dash. And we heard from Marty McGee earlier, Morticia bypassing the opportunity to face the boys at Churchill in favor of here. She was 9-2 at home. She's 5-2 on the road. Lascano gets back aboard, plenty familiar with her. Morticia, the filly to beat. And I would also point out, just talking, it feels like this comes down to that pair, Jason Service and Rusty Arnold.
Yeah, Morticia is terrific. And the more I looked at her PPs yesterday and her campaign was amazing. Last year, she had stakes wins at Gulfstream Park, at Belmont, at Saratoga, and at Keeneland. That's pretty remarkable in one season. You know, if you can do that, you're doing something right. You know, all the big tracks, stakes win at each one of them. Now, having said that, everything's firm. It's firm, 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 right down through her past performance lines. Never on soft. It's a question mark. I mean, to me, if it's firm, she wins, you know. And if it's less than firm, I think that's a question mark. I agree with you. If you're looking to move to somebody else, that Just Talking is the one. She's going to probably be the second choice, and her form is pretty much out there. She comes in here for Jason off an optional claiming win at Gulfstream. One other horse. A Sal is a very tough horse, trained at Parks by Mike Farrow, Mike and Patricia Farrow. A dirt horse, switching the grass here in this sprint. And very fast, very tough horse. In her last 11 starts, she's won 4 times and she's been second 7 times. and close. But I might consider throwing her in a little bit, just as a longer shot. And if I wanted to go a little longer even, I might even throw in Daylight Ahead, trained by the McMahons, Hugh McMahon. She is okay for the footing. She's won over good at Laurel off the layoff a year ago, and it was more than good, I remember that day. So I think the footing favors her, and I think the footing's important in this race. You've got to kind of read between the lines of that it's going to be the equaling factor. I mean, if everyone handles it, Morticia wins to me. And if some may and some may not. So that's kind of where I stand. I look at this as you either play it as a single or you play it as a spread.
Well, given the rest of the sequence, ideally it would be nice to tiptoe through this with maybe, just Morticia and potentially, I don't know if I guess she could single him, but my inclination
it's
would
hard, isn't it? It's she's a hard single.
Well, she's an A, and just talking the B, because later on you're going to have to spread some multiples around when it comes to the rest of the sequence. It's a really good, and we haven't even enough time to talk about the Pennsylvania Bred Stakes, but the New Start, the Lafarge and the Danzig, all nice full fields. It's a tremendous card. Things continue in the match series. We should, of course, mention with this week, third straight week of match series races. We went from Pimlico to Monmouth, now to Penn National. And speaking of the region, racing kicked off at Delaware. They did $2 million the other day. A very smart move to start midweek.
I agree with you, and I was kind of surprised by it, but in retrospect, you are correct. They usually open up on the weekend, and then they're kind of overwhelmed or swamped by the bigger signals. They opened up on Wednesday, and they handled $2 million. I've watched the races there Wednesday and Thursday, and pretty good product, and it's very nice to visit that paddock on the simul feed between races, find it very relaxing. And they're off to a good start. And next week, on Tuesday, Delaware becomes the first state to enact the sports betting.
And we talked to Rich Glazier.
Sports betting opens in Delaware on Tuesday.
I'm glad you mentioned it. We also, speaking of starting, Laurel picks up the ball and runs till Timonium.
It's kind of a quiet summer meet down there, but they'll make good use of their grass course. And, the stakes program is modest, but because of their turf course, they can fill those fields up pretty well down in Laurel. I mean, horsemen are kind of geared to that now, where that they're going to ride a lot of grass races, and you got to have grass horses in your barn, to get in down there a lot of times. So you can look for a lot of good-sized fields, which makes for good play.
James Dunleavy, everybody, and you can follow Jim on Twitter, DRF Dunleavy. He'll be on hand at Penn National for it's sort of a twilighty hybrid afternoon, early evening, which works nicely. The first post is at 3:45. The stakes start at 4:40, and the all stakes pick four on the grass starts at 6:10 with the Penn Mile, 7:45. Jim, we'll be following and betting along. Thanks for the visit.
I'll be driving there tomorrow morning.
There you go. You can also, we got Stu Kirschenbaum on hand already today, too. And Stu's been sending out some visuals, including Encumbered, getting some work in over the track at Penn National. I hope they have a great day, because this is a terrific card. Eric Johnson does a great job, and looking forward to tomorrow. We'll take a break. Hour three, Rick Hammerly. Then before we wrap up, Dave Grenig and Mike Welch will be here together. Always fun. Stay with us.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.